You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Hi, Jim, and it's good to be with you and our audience out there. The audience in British Columbia is looking at rain today, and we have not had rain in a long time.
Yes, we had temperatures in some parts of BC, 37, 40 degrees Celsius. That's 104 Fahrenheit. For people like to look at the old scale. So, yep. Yeah, and the headline I saw just before we went on air, parts of British Columbia to receive a month's worth of rain in 3 days.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm up on the 17th floor.
And where I'm situated in New Westminster overlooking the mighty Fraser River, I can't see the shore on the other side of the river. It's just a white
right.
wall of rain right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not complaining.
No.
We are not complaining.
That's what we had such a drought, you can't believe it. And I talked to my sister and I said, no, when the rain comes, we're not going to complain about it. So
today, Bob, we have several listener questions to get through. So our first question comes from John, and he asks the question, hi, Uncle Bob. Martin Armstrong's computer, Socrates, says the next senior currency will be China's currency from 2032 to maybe 2035. That's when the renminbi or yuan will become the world's trading currency. What say you on that subject?
First of all, I think Martin Armstrong's Socrates program, I've been seeing his comments about it for decades. And I think it is a front for what he personally thinks at the moment. Because it's getting conclusions that you just can't get out of a computer. So anyways, that one is suspect. And then the other one, China's currency becoming the senior currency. Here's the history of the senior currency. It's in the financial and commercial center of the world. And 2,000 years ago, it was Rome. And then Florence became a prosperous city-state. And then in the 1300s, vast amounts of silver were discovered in the Harz Mountains near Augsburg in Austria. I guess it's in Austria. And then that became, there's so much silver and trade going on, that became the financial center. And their coinage was the guilder. And now, this relates to the dollar, because in slang terms, the financial guys were referring to it as the valley. Only in their language, the valley was thaler, T-H-A-L-E-R, and then that then became dollar. So that's just an interesting curiosity. So I guess 1700s, it went from Antwerp with the guilder to London was then became the financial center beginning in the early 1700s, and pound sterling was the senior currency. And that went on until England's financial problems during the 1930s and all that sort of stuff. So out of the 30s and 40s, New York became the financial center, and the U.S. dollar became the senior currency. And this will maintain for decades and decades. And no committee, and like BRICS, who are nations who are very envious of the U.S. dollar, and they think they can come up with a senior currency, it ain't going to happen. So I'm content that the senior currency It will remain the U.S. dollar for decades and decades.
Next up, we have Willem Gruters, longtime friend of the show from the Netherlands. And he has three questions for us, Bob, and they're all lengthy, but he does ask good questions. His first one is, in a recession, interest rates go down, and when the economy is getting stronger, interest rates rise. This was a common thing, at least in the year 1990. But there's another worrying interest rate signal. Since 1980, interest rates have, on average, way only down. These falling rates suggest the economy in, for example, Europe since 1980, the U.S. since 1980, and Canada since 1990 has, on average, gotten worse. Any comments?
Yeah. First of all, we should define interest rates. And whether you're talking about the long end or the medium term or T-bills. And for business cycle stuff, it's very easy and appropriate to use the T-bill. 3 months or 6 months, doesn't matter, whatever the data is available. And here is the iron-bound rule. And it goes back for hundreds of years. In a boom, the short rates go up, and in a bust, they go down. And now you've got, there's a huge part of the financial world, academic economists in Wall Street and that sort of stuff, are calling, or they're seeing a little nervousness out there in the economy and in the markets, and then they're saying, they're pleading for a rate cut. And the first naive thing is that they think that the Federal Reserve sets interest rates. No, I can show over a couple hundred years that the senior central bank follows the changes in interest rates. How can, I mean, there's, I think it's 10 members are on the Federal Market Open Committee, and they can take on the whole world where jillions of transactions are setting interest rates, including those in the financial center. So anyways, the worst thing that can happen is that short rates go down and the Fed starts with Fed cuts. And this is what they're celebrating now. Oh, Fed cuts, and it's going to keep the boom going. No, that is a glaringly bad intuition. All anybody has to do is look at the last couple hundred years of data. Since 1930s and 40s U.S., prior to that, London, and it's there. Short rates go down during the bust, and they go down a long ways. In 1932, the T-bill rate gone to 0.08%, and we're heading for zero on interest. Now the T-bill set its high in June and has declined a little. But I think as the economy gets slower, it'll decline a lot. Now, let's look back it up and look at it in 1929, what happened there. The T-bill rose, I think it was 5% in June of 1929. And then it went down, as I said, 0.08 in 1932. So the whole there is an astonishing number of commentators out there who are working on intuition, and the intuition is dead wrong. And all they need to look is, as I've said, at history, and short rates go up with the boom and down with the bust. Now, we've got the whole yield curve out there, and all lower grade bonds get trashed because the street becomes wary of the ability of these companies or countries to service the debt. So lower grade stuff gets literally trashed. There's going to be any number of junk bonds just default and go and disappear. And then that lack of liquidity even pulls down at times the price of longer dated treasuries. So our ideal position in a post-bubble contraction is 3 to 4 year maturity, good grade corporates. You'll get a better yield, and the yield won't go to zero, and they'll be redeemed at par. If you're in a good grade one, the company isn't going to disappear in 3 years or 4 years. And then for Canadian investors, buy U.S. ones, because then you'll get the extra kick from the U.S. dollar being stronger than the Canadian. So that's kind of an ideal portfolio, not just for fixed income investors, but also for equity guys, because there's times when you just don't want to be in the equity markets.
The second question from Vellum. People are complaining that real estate prices are so high, but I use a metric that actually explains why real estate is so expensive. That is, in the past, say, 70 years, a growing percentage of women have entered the workforce. Let's assume a bank is willing to lend 4 times household income. Well, you have 2 incomes happening, and it's for every country in the Western world. So doesn't it justify these higher prices, Bob?
Yeah, that's an extra bid, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, and then, of course, it's just also against the deliberate central bank monetary depreciation. So, yeah, the house prices until three years ago were wonderful. And then in using either, U.S. house price index, they've been kind of weak and soggy for the last 3 years, I guess, now. Yeah. And also, real estate can, it goes down with the depression. So all kind, whether it's farm or agricultural real estate or industrial or city real estate, it has a problem.
Third question from the Netherlands. Did the peak momentum indicator go off or start to ring in say the past 12 months?
Oh, Bert brought up the peak momentum indicator. Ross and I were talking about that, maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And here's a confession. We couldn't find an example in our files, and we can't remember what it was. So there you are, full confession. The peak momentum indicator, whatever it was, obviously we're not using it.
And the final comment or question here from Vellum. As someone who lives outside the U.S. and Europe, I think I'll buy a bunch of U.S. T-bonds to profit from the fact that the U.S. dollar euro will go ballistic in the next crisis or crash. It will be a double whammy using the U.S. dollar and falling U.S. interest rates. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, well, we covered a bit of that, but just to wrap it up, you don't want to be in long-dated bonds of any kind. So the ideal, as I said, 3 to 4 year U.S. good grade corporate would be a very friendly place to be.
And our third question now comes from our longtime friend Kathleen. Hi, Bob and Jim. MarketWatch reports that the Powerball jackpot is now $655 million U.S., but cautions investors not to become addictive gamblers. Meanwhile, Zero Hedge reports Goldman Sachs as saying the meme stock resurgence has spread into the broader buying of large cap stocks. Remember the spinning wheel song from the late 60s? What goes up must come down.
Yeah.
Death by Blood, Sweat, and Tears, I believe.
Yeah.
So, Bob, is this a case of what's going up so fast? Is it going to come tumbling down real fast?
Well, we use the old classic seasonality, and that you can have a good times into mid-year. So the good times have happened, and we thought, beginning a month or so, that it could be really exciting into late July, maybe into August, and then if it was classic, maybe even right to September, and then if you have a September peak on a great bubble, you know what happens next. So anyways, yeah, the stock market is extremely overbought at an ideal time. So we'll just see how it behaves in September and recall and remind ourselves that if a crash is going to happen, it's likely in the fall. And on the historical stuff on this, there was an excellent book by Cipolla, an Italian scholar, on financial markets in the late 1300s in Italy. And yeah, there was they were trading some sort of a mortgage vehicle in those days. And there was, they got overdone, and then it was a disaster. And the worst parts of it in this book occurred in the fall. So that takes the fall disaster thing back to, I think it was 1385 or something like that, but in that neighborhood. So market forces are fascinating.
Well, Bob, you were alive back then, right? You saw it happen.
Age is there. I've been around for a long time, the financial history has been there for an even longer time.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Here are some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye this week. From Real Climate Science, why insurers worry the world could soon be uninsurable.
Yeah, somebody being hysterical about global warming and it's going to impair insurance companies. So yeah, just another bit of climate hysteria.
Now, we have seen, because property costs so much more now, the fires in L.A., we have forest fires all across Canada and the U.S. right now. And I just saw we may have an El Niña winter, which means wetter and I guess more snow. So, yeah, but as you said...
Well, I know that in... I think in the 1870s, sorry, I haven't got the exact date, but that summer in Wisconsin, so to speak, there were horrendous fires. Thousands of people killed. They were just unbelievable. So there have been serious forest fires since they invented trees, for God's sake. You got the arboreal forest in Canada that runs from sort of near the Atlantic provinces, then all the way up and across Ontario and the northern Manitoba and right up into the Yukon. And forests burn. That's all there is to it. The tragedy, of course, is when some person sets off a fire, either intentionally or accidentally, and that is a tragedy.
From Zero Hedge, AI CapEx mania, tech titans outspend the rest of the market 2-1.
Yeah, AI, they've got a big, exciting sector to get excited about. And again, it's a headline showing excesses.
A friend of the show, Rick Ackerman, on This Week in Money points out, so far, AI hasn't made people any money.
I like rich stuff. I'll take a look at it. So, yeah.
From Zero Hedge, futures trade at all-time high as global market euphoria goes to 11. Referring back to that old Spinal Tap movie where the amplifier didn't go to 10, it went to 11.
Oh, my God. I missed it. Anyways, but it's the way, like in 1929, in the final thrust of that bull market into September, the world was buying U.S. equities because that's where the action was. And, you know, Radio Corp, RCA, God, it went up to, I think, let's say, in the order of $125. And they were expecting $3 a share earnings. And then it crashed down to about $1.25. And, oh, yeah, I had fun doing the research on this one years ago. And it didn't get back to the high of 1929 until the mid-1950s. So it took you 30-plus years to get your money back if you were in it at all that time. So it was a delightful irony in the financial markets. I remember another one. The $3 a share earnings were largely due to the Elvis Presley recordings.
Oh.
And in 1929, Elvis Presley didn't exist. But the street was buying in 1929, not knowing what was next.
Elvis became a hit the same year I was born.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, I liked his early ones, Heartbreak Hotel. Oh, good stuff.
From Zero Hedge, liquidity is starting to flow with Fed cuts and China stimulus.
Yeah, they're going on. See, a key one in that is the Fed cuts. This is, as they think, big stuff. And then I don't know what China's doing by way of stimulus, but China's a precarious economy because it's headed up by the Communist Party. And when this thing turns down, it's going to be a disaster. So, I think China is going to suffer a very serious failure.
Is it time for small caps?
Yeah, that's the way it goes. The market bottom, everything's down, and then the big caps are the first to turn up, and then the middling caps turn up, and then eventually the action turns to small caps. That's a classic, yep.
From Reuters, HSBC takes extra space in Canary Wharf in London due to headquarters squeeze.
Right. Major financial house, and it needs more space. Right.
Is that because they're telling people you got to come back to the office, you can't work from home anymore?
Yeah, Jim, that'd be helping, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Also from Reuters, Europeans pile into local ETFs at a record rate at the expense of U.S. stocks.
Yeah. Oh, this one is a bit different because they're saying, they're buying local ETFs, and you know they're going to get stuck with them.
And our final, we've got two more headlines here. The electric pickup truck boom turned into a big bust.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, this has been such a fad. Like, passionate people got into these things because there were no tailpipe emissions. But man, to build an electric vehicle, it takes all kinds of rare earths. You got to mine this stuff, and then and the lithium batteries are very dangerous. They spontaneously explode, and they're just a disaster. And you've got the Canadian government, Ottawa, is calling for an unbelievable percentage of cars that must be EVs by a certain year. And they're pushing this, but with that, if the industry actually builds them, there's not going to be enough electricity. They will have to build about 10 nuclear power plants. So at how much is it going to cost to build 10 nuclear power plants, and how long is it going to take to build them? So this is where the politicians are absolutely stark, raving mad. They've got an idea. But anyways, I think that the market forces are turning against EVs, and the Carney government in Ottawa is just such a disaster, and we're not due for election for 4 years, but somewhere, I think, maybe with a failure in the economy and general disaster, maybe he could be forced to resign. I mean, the Liberal Party got rid of Trudeau because he was just too nonsensical. He was fine for the Liberal Party when he could win elections. And then now you've got Carney, who is a certified idiot on global warming.
And our final headline from Zero Hedge: push to cut livestock for climate goals due to burping and farting worries UK farmers and ecologists.
Yeah, they're gonna shut down farming, for God's sakes. I mean, as I say, because of the flatulence. People, maybe just 10 years from now, are just not going to believe that such nonsense was being enthusiastically promoted. This is wonderful times to be alive and watching these things.
Well, I've just researched how many bison were roaming the prairies back in the 1500s and 1600s when you pointed out they were burning witches at the stake because the climate was getting colder. Yep. 60,000 women may have been burned at the stake alone in Germany. Anyway, you would think things would be warming up if you had 60 million, that's just buffalo or bison roaming around, but wildlife would have been rampant all around the planet, burping and expelling gas, and things were getting colder, not warmer, Bob. How come that wasn't the case then?
Well, you know, I've used the line about in the 1500s in Germany where they executed thousands of witches because they were causing the cold, wet weather. Now that 1500s was the cold and wet also deteriorated the quality of grass for animals that lived on grass. So the livestock had a problem as well. It was a disaster through and through. And as mentioned, the magistrates blamed the witches and through judicial means executed thousands of them, whereas now it's much more democratic. It's not witches that are causing the bad weather, but it's you and me and children and even infants are causing the bad weather. So there you go.
Well, Bob, we know what happens when you switch to an all-bean diet.
Yeah, then you add macaroni elbows and you get the pipe organ effect.
I just read recently when Mount Pinatubo erupted in the Philippines, it erased 10 years of carbon credits overnight.
Pinatubo blew up and it was huge. cooling for a couple of years.
And, of course, we have that volcanic eruption happening in Russia right now after that serious earthquake.
Yeah. Oh, was Pinatubo the one that blew up in 1816?
Oh, no. That was Krakatoa.
And no, 1888. No, anyways, there was a big one blew up in 1816. Mm. And newspapers in New York State and that area record farmers planted at their usual time. The new crops got frosted out. They planted three times, and then they gave up. So there was a serious shortage of food and famine resulting and many deaths resulting. That 1816 was a very bad one.
Yes, Krakatoa blew up in 1883, and it caused crop failures and so on from its volcanic ash for 3 years around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, one volcanic eruption can change. It doesn't matter how many cars you get rid of or whatever.
Yeah.
Mother Earth just, like it burps. Or, in some cases, farts.
Yes. Bob? Oh, how daring language on our show today, Jim.
Oh, yes, burp and fart. I know we're on the internet. We can use any kind of language we like, but being a broadcaster, I always thought, never use language that you wouldn't use in front of your mother.
Yes.
So those words are okay.
Yes.
Bob, we
have to have a standard of decorum, proper decorum, yes.
Yes, decorum.
Yes.
Bob, always fun talking with you.
Very good, Jim, and we look forward to getting together next week.
My guest has been Bob Hoy, Chief Investment Strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@housestreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street or also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.